it is time to seriously reconsider Bitcoin.
Our money's been broken for a long time.
Just trying to dip your toes. You're just trying to flirt, right? We're not going to force it on you.
So I can give him Bitcoin. He can give me honey. Now I got a honey guy.
I wanted us to go back to our roots.
I can give him Bitcoin. He gives me soap. Now I got a soap guy.
There is a lot of fear and panic around these tariffs.
Your house gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to me.
Bitcoin is the way. And today we're going to explain why.
Eventually, my dad is always right.
You're listening to Flirting with Bitcoin, a weekly chat with my very interesting husband about Bitcoin and how the world and our family's life is better because of it.
It's season 4 and we've moved to Noster City.
So my Bitcoin lessons are done?
Your Bitcoin lessons are never done.
So what does new social media have to do with it?
Babe, Noster is more than social media. If Bitcoin is the new money, Noster is the new internet.
You really think so?
I do. I believe Noster will drive the next wave of Bitcoin adoption. So Noster City is where we need to be.
We?
Yeah, of course we're bringing Keon. You got your bags packed, buddy?
Yes.
Good job. Don't forget to pack your NPub.
Let's go. Hey, Ian.
Hey, Mondana.
It doesn't matter, but Bitcoin's up right now.
At the time of this recording, yes, Bitcoin is up.
At the time of this recording. But I think generally there's a lot that's been happening, not just with the Bitcoin price, but externally with just the world, the economy, politics, all of these things kind of have created this perfect storm of some people maybe finally ready to flirt with Bitcoin.
Yeah, price usually catches people's attention. So we're close to all-time highs. People gonna people.
But also, there is more evidence, I think, for people to see and feel inflation and to feel the instability of the dollar and the financial systems that they're in right now. And it's giving more incentive to be curious and open-minded about Bitcoin. And because of that, I wanted us to go back to our roots and do an episode about what Bitcoin is, why it's worth someone's attention, why it's worth investing in it, buying it, saving in it, explaining those nuances to someone who at this point has heard about Bitcoin. They have a sense of what it is, but they don't really understand what it is. And they don't understand what it means to actually have Bitcoin in the way that it could change your life, right? That maybe you could quit your job, retire early, address your finances a little differently.
Yeah, so our roots were trying to convince our family to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, that's the roots of this podcast, or at least get them to pay attention. And since we've started this podcast, you know, we've gotten our immediate family to pay attention and do those things and I think understand its value. But still in the extended family, it's a little like, I don't know. And that's just because they don't have as many touch points with us as our like immediate family does, I think.
Right. So orange pilling, as we like to call it, is getting someone to understand what Bitcoin is, getting them to really unlock their minds and be open-minded to this concept of new money and what that means. And so this act of orange pilling someone, today we would like to orange pill you. So if you're listening, if you're a longtime listener, thanks for tuning in. I hope that this is something that you can play for someone who's maybe on the ledge, the good ledge, diving into Bitcoin ledge. But if you are just trying to dip your toes, you're just trying to flirt, right? We're not going to force it on you, but it is time to seriously reconsider Bitcoin. It's time to possibly reconsider how you are using Bitcoin if you have Bitcoin, to get some insight from Ian and I, who have been able to change our lives completely thanks to Bitcoin and our own determination and free will to decide how we were going to apply Bitcoin to our lives for the better. A lot of the questions that we get is like, okay, well, but how do you live off Bitcoin? I don't understand. You say your mortgage got cheaper. What do you mean? What do you spend your Bitcoin on? We're getting a lot of those very like real life application questions. And today we are going to answer them for you. But before we get into it, babe, what time is it?
The current time is 895-959, and we're approximately 2,295 blocks since our last recording.
And if I gave you one almost worthless US dollar, how many acres could I get on sunny Bitcoin Island?
Today, you could get 970 acres, aka Satoshis, on sunny Bitcoin Island. So we're back below 1,000.
Sats are getting more expensive.
Dollar's getting more worthless.
Right. So on that note, like, why is the dollar becoming more worthless? There is a lot of fear and panic around these tariffs, the Trump tariffs that are going to be applied. Some of them maybe have, some of them haven't. There's some loopholes. So there's a lot of purchasing power that's being impacted by these tariffs that's then making people panic about their future spending. It's making individuals who have to buy simple things that they know come from other countries, it's all of a sudden going to be more expensive. And it's very interesting that that is what's causing the public panic more so than the actual increase in things that we've been buying the last 5 years. But I do want to call it this almost perfect storm, because I believe that up until now, it's become political. It's whoever's in power. That's to blame almost if things are more expensive. And then if you're happy with who's in power, you kind of are in denial about things being more expensive, right?
Sure.
But now you have these concrete numbers. You have these percentages. You have small businesses, bigger businesses, people part of the supply chain being like, everything's about to become more expensive. So with that, how do you navigate this? How do you plan for it? How do you survive this? And Bitcoin is the way. And today we're going to explain why.
Yeah, so let's get into it.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M-Pub. And just start with that.
So I don't know how many years into being a Bitcoin podcaster, how many years into just being the one that explains to people what Bitcoin is. But Ian, I'm going to ask you, can you very briefly explain to someone in this context, right, who has maybe heard about Bitcoin a little, has for a long time said it's not for me, and is now finally like, all right, maybe I'll explain this to me. What is your answer for the question, what is Bitcoin?
I mean, you know that that's like such a loaded question.
It's such a loaded question.
But what I'll
say— But you always reframe it, right? You're like, well, let me ask you this.
Yeah, but you're not asking me to do that. So I would say that Bitcoin is the best money ever invented. And that's like a big statement, because people don't think of money as something that's been invented.
I love that that's the approach you took, because lately in my mind and how I've been talking to people about it is that it is an invention, and it's not the only invention that was coming about during that time. People had been trying other things because our money was broken. There was actually somebody who, or a company that had tried to do something in terms of like gold-backed money or something that the government had shut down earlier. In 2008, when that white paper was issued a few months later.
Yeah.
And so this idea that, oh, well, where did Bitcoin come from? Who came up with it? Money has been broken for a long time. And there are a lot of people that have been playing around with different solutions for it. And I think that context is really important to understand that it's not, oh, there's Bitcoin and then these other cryptos, which is the best one. It's that people knew money was broken and they were trying to figure out, well, what's a better way to exchange value? And after different attempts that were shut down by central authorities, somebody or a team of people came up with this idea, invention called Bitcoin. And it has so far proven to be the one that is solving the problems of our broken money. And it's a better form of money than we've ever seen.
The idea of our money being broken is, I think, becoming more and more accepted, right? People are starting to understand what inflation is and understanding where it comes from. People are starting to understand that our economy is not necessarily a free market. Like, there are centralizing factors that just make broad sweeping decisions that affect the economy, like these tariffs that are happening right now. But what I think people lack is the context of like how long our money has been broken. If you talk to a lot of Bitcoiners or just people that like know money, they'll probably tell you that money got broken, you know, like in the early 1900s when they invented the Federal Reserve, and they've been like basically printing, you know, printing money since its creation. But our money's been broken a lot longer than that. And our money's been broken ever since pretty much the Bank of England was formed in the 1800s And probably even before that, when the Spanish went to the New World and started bringing back gold from the New World and broke the financial system of Europe, right? Like the system of Europe did not expect boatloads of gold to be showing up for like 100 years. Like no one had set up a system like that. And so our money's been broken for a long time because no one ever really knew how much there is, no matter what unit you want to use, whether it's wampum or salt or gold or silver or head of cattle. No one was ever able to know, well, how many cows are there? Well, how much salt is there? And so because you never knew the total amount circulating, fundamentally your money's always been broken. And so what we've seen over history is that those systemic problems eventually come to a head and we have to switch to something new. So the last time that happened was the previous gold standard in Italy with Florence and the florin and the gold coins and the banking system that they created. And we see what happened from them creating that system is that you get this golden age of prosperity and all these things start happening because people could do actual accounting better than they could before. Well, Bitcoin is just a better version of that. Like we can do better accounting of money. And because we can do better accounting of money, literally as a program, literally as software that you can write and test and like prove that these things are true, it enables people, individuals, corporations, countries, everyone from the bottom to the top to really do a solid accounting of like, how much money do I actually have and what can I actually accomplish with that?
I think this is probably where you might lose some people because it's such a grand scale. And someone goes, okay, but how does it work for me? Like, I'm going to be very honest. I kind of lost you in that conversation.
That's fine.
Yeah.
My point is that we all have this problem. And what we've been experiencing is that sometimes a person has a problem and it's actually showing up as a gain for someone else. And the best example of that is housing. So boomers, you know, bought their houses in the 70s and the 80s. And now they're asking for millions of dollars for houses that they bought for tens of thousands of dollars, right? And so to the boomer, that's a good thing, right? It's like, I'm going to sell this house. It's worth a lot of money. But to the Gen Zers coming up, it's like, bro, I don't have $1 million. And so—
Also, your house sucks.
That too, but
it's
like—
It's old. It's not well-maintained. It's, yeah, it's an inflated price for an asset that's just inflated because our money is broken. It's not because that value, its value has actually gone up. And people are feeling that constantly when they're going to purchase things, purchase very expensive things. They're seeing, okay, well, you're telling me it costs this much, but there's no way. Even if 10 years ago you told me that house would be $1 million, what I picture as a house that costs $1 million is not what you're showing me. And that disconnect used to happen over, I think, decades.
Over generations.
Right. Whereas now you're like, what are you talking? 10 years ago, that house, I see the price. I see the price on Zillow. It's ridiculous. You paid that much. You've done nothing since. Like everyone is constantly experiencing that year after year. And it's not this like momentary bubble that's happening. It's just everything is constantly more and more expensive. What your goalpost is for saving for something that you want to buy just keeps moving. And I think to the point where a lot of people, if they have money, are just spending it. They don't even know anymore. You have no concept of how much things cost. You're just buying what you need to. And then people who can't afford it are stuck. They're either accumulating debt. Who even knows what's happening with debt in this country, by the way? Or they just have no choice. They have no option to actually purchase and fulfill the dreams that they want, right? Which could be, for example, home ownership.
Sure. But the point that I was driving at is that example of home inflation is why the problem never gets solved, because it's the same problem, but since half of the group is benefiting from it, they are okay with the system. However, and we have a real life example, it happened on our block, 3 houses down. And I've been talking about this on the podcast, right? So there's a guy on our block who 2 years ago tried to sell his house. And he was asking for like, I don't know, like $800,000 or some crazy number. And I knew that it wasn't going to sell. And I told our neighbor it wasn't going to sell. And I explained why it wasn't going to sell. 2 years later, he ended up selling it for $700,000. And so a fiat person would say, oh, that sucks. You lost $100,000 trying to sell your house, right? But in Bitcoin terms, if he had sold his house for $700,000 2 years ago and put that into Bitcoin, he would have, I think it's like $2 to $3 million now. So he didn't lose out on $100,000. He lost out on $3 million if Bitcoin is your accounting mechanism. And so now, because Bitcoin operates in this deflationary mode, people can actually see that holding out for 2 years was not worth it, right? Like, we're talking about the prices of houses. It's like, they won't sell them. They want $1 million. Okay, fine, but you should take the money today.
Yeah, I think there's this lag and people understanding kind of the urgency of getting your money out of anywhere where there are rules around it and putting it in Bitcoin as soon as possible. I think because most of those people don't understand the actual data behind how Bitcoin has performed. If we think of Bitcoin as a stock, which we shouldn't, but that's where most people's brains go, they'll say, okay, but stocks go up and down. The price of Bitcoin goes up and down. That's just lucky for the past 2 years. That they were able to make that profit. But like, how do you know? When do you know that the price is going to go up? And I think the really interesting fun fact about Bitcoin is that you have real data. It's been around for about 15 years. You have real data about the price and what would have happened in any point of time if you had made a different financial decision and you had made that Bitcoin decision instead. So I believe there is at least 100% return year after year on Bitcoin on average. Is that correct?
On average, it's about 100% a year.
Yes.
We have had down years, but the up years erase those down years.
Yeah. And I think it's very easy for a Bitcoiner to just make that statement, laugh it off, and keep it going. But for someone that's not a Bitcoiner and hearing that, they're like, huh, what? Yeah. Look it up. We're not going to sit here and just spout off statistics, but actually look it up. Grab your favorite AI agent and ask them. Actually, one of my favorite things that I've been telling people lately is ask AI what they think of Bitcoin. AI will tell you by Bitcoin because they have the real data. They have the real facts. Tell them to not give you like mainstream financial advice. Have them actually understand what Bitcoin is and walk through like, you know, what your buying strategy could have been, all of those things. It will tell you what we're telling you because this is not rooted in theory or feelings or politics. This is just data and math. And if you want to learn the math, go for it. I don't think you do, because if you did, you would have learned it at this point. But you can go ask an AI agent. The compelling part of Bitcoin for some people is the amount of money that you could make off of it. But I think the realistic angle that I think a lot of people who are curious about it, who are flirting with it, you really need to think about what's happening to your money currently and the value that it's losing currently. And at minimum, Bitcoin gives you a safe space to put your money so that you're not constantly losing value. Your money's not at risk of getting taken, which I think we really need to talk about. And you can move it freely. You can spend it whenever you want, however you want. I think opening people's eyes to how fragile their actual ownership of their money is very important in this day and age, because governments right now are going after people more openly, more more boldly than they ever had before. And I think people are realizing, oh, when my guy's not in power, I'm in trouble. Oh, even when my guy's in power, I might be in trouble because everything is automated now. I saw this very interesting interview that I don't know her last name, Efrat, the journalist Efrat was doing with someone who had recently just had their bank account frozen. And they hadn't done anything, but their bank account was frozen because of something that the system had just triggered. So they froze everything. And it was so fascinating the way that he was talking about the experience. He said, when you commit a crime, you are possibly arrested and charged, but then you have a trial and that's when they then decide that you're guilty and then they'll freeze your assets, right? That's how it should be. But that's not what's happening anymore. Some system is deciding that you're guilty, freezing all of your stuff. And then there's a process that decides like what's going on. And throughout that entire experience, it's a private entity that has made that decision. And so it's not even a government that's made that decision to freeze your assets. It's just a private company, their systems, something you did flagged it. And it might take a few days. It might take a week, depending on the people that are part of that process to like help you appeal. That's insane. But that is the standard because there's so much liability around these central organizations that are managing our money. And so I'm not out here trying to vilify anyone. I understand that there are regulations and they have to do what they have to do so that they're compliant. But that's not my problem. I don't need that. If you have all of this stuff that you have to do to hold my money, you don't need to hold my money anymore. Because the solution that you have come up with is actually violating my rights. And we're okay with it because somehow, you know, them avoiding liability is more important than me having rights to my own money. And I think that as people see more and more examples brought to them of people like them or in situations that they might be in, perhaps you might see more of the urgency to just holding your own money and not letting anyone else either take it from you or tell you can't move it when you want to.
Yeah. You know, me being in Bitcoin, I saw some things that I probably would not have seen because I was in Bitcoin, or I probably would have seen them later, like after everything had happened versus watching it happen in real time. And the biggest one was the Canadian protest. Like during COVID, these guys were protesting, fundamentally having their company shut down. And you would think that, okay, you might disagree with them protesting, but that would be okay. And watching what happened to the Canadian protesters was when I was like, oh, yep. Like, it's possible. And if it can happen in Canada, like Canada's not that far away from America. Like it's not that different of a system. And I think a lot of people were activated by the Canadian protest. I think even Michael Saylor kind of talks about it. Michael Saylor is a big person in the Bitcoin space. If you're new, you're just hearing about all this stuff. A lot of people talk about how that really like activated them because they saw themselves in that event. And it was crazy. Like, I'll admit, like, I had never thought about like that happening. And I would say that I was like, yeah, this Bitcoin thing is cool from like a technology standpoint. This Bitcoin thing is cool from like, you know, the community and how they kind of talk and interact. But I never really saw myself as someone who could be, you know, I don't say targeted, but like, be in that bucket of people that you're like, oh, that sucks that happened to them. And
yeah, you're former military, I'm American born. Who's coming for you?
You're not going to catch me at a protest. That's not my thing. People who want to do it, I support them doing it. But I definitely saw myself as like, oh, I could see a scenario where they say Bitcoiners are terrorists. Like I could see that scenario. Yeah. And so if I'm already down this path, then I need to either get out of it or I need to go all the way down the path so that if that day does happen, I've set it up where you can't freeze my assets and freeze my bank account and stuff like that.
I mean, there's that whole saying, like, first they came for the Jews and I said nothing. First they came for the Mexicans and I said nothing. And then they came for me and there was no one to say anything about me. It's that same idea, right? It's that same of you watch it happen to a bunch of people and you think that sucks or possibly they did something bad. The government had to step in. But then eventually you realize like, wait a second, but I didn't do anything wrong. And I think that angle is one that some people might get, but I really love that's happening, right? I mean, it's not great, but this tariff, it's unifying because there's so many people that either like Trump or don't like Trump, or they're just like, I don't care about politics. This stuff doesn't affect me. And all of a sudden they're like, wait, what do you mean? One person can just decide all of this stuff and then everything becomes more expensive and I have to shut down my small business because the math just doesn't work for me anymore. I think that is such a interesting unifying event where people really wake up to how much is out of their control. And also this is man-made, right? Like people are making those decisions, but I want to go back to this, like systems flagging, freezing, all of those things. I think that's where everything is headed, where even the most well-intentioned company, a well-intentioned system could glitch or intentionally freeze your stuff. That is where we're moving, where you're not going to have a person to be able to call. It's going to be a chatbot. It's going to take time. It could take days. And eventually, why would anyone want to operate in that system where they could just hold their own money and no one could. It's like you'll never have those pain points again. If you are a Bitcoiner and you go to buy a house through like the regular banking system and get a mortgage, you lose your mind because the delays on moving your money, you just haven't experienced in such a long time that if you experience those things, it feels so restrictive. You feel like someone is keeping your money from you. So I think that people also need to have a little bit taste of freedom a few times, like transfer Bitcoin a few times, really feel what it means to be able to send someone money without anyone else's permission. And then every time you're moving money the old way, moving broken money the old way, it'll feel like you are not moving freely.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the deal. And this is more a philosophical thing, but that's the deal when you accept the dollar. Like when you exchange value for the dollar, you're basically saying, I'll exchange whatever good or service you have for something that you fundamentally don't control. And when we've all, pretty much everyone alive today has only lived in that system. So how would you, like, unless you're buying bread with gold, like how would you ever feel free? Like even cash has a serial number on it. So if someone wants to, they can fundamentally track those dollars through the system. Freedom of commerce, freedom of transaction is sure somewhere in some legal document of the United States government and governments all over the world probably. But writing it down on paper is one thing. Actually experiencing it is another. And just some of the things that we've done with Bitcoin over the last couple of years, yeah, it's how you think everything works, but it actually works that way. Like when you pay someone with a credit card, you think you're giving them money, but you're not. They don't see that money for like 30 to 60 days.
And they pay a fee on it.
And they pay a fee on it versus if I pay someone in Bitcoin, I bought some honey the other day. I know the guy got the money and it's his money. It's not 30 or 60 days later. He didn't pay a fee. I think I paid like a penny to send it to him. And
we got our honey.
And we got our honey, but like it's not this like trust me bro system.
It's not this complicated system of multiple points of failure and a lot of other people involved in a transaction that it's just not necessary. People have to decide, am I comfortable in this situation to just exchange money with someone without anyone else involved? We should be able to make that decision. If we want that layer of protection, sure, go into PayPal, hit that thing where like you'll be able to get a refund if you want to dispute the chart. Fine. All of those things exist. But if you just want to give someone else money, you don't want anyone else involved, there is no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that. And I say that because you can just hand someone cash, except what Bitcoin allows is for you to send as much money as you want to anyone in the world. And you might not have that use case yet, but once you have Bitcoin, you will find places to spend it. So next up, I want to talk about how to actually live on Bitcoin. That's the fun part, right?
So far, so fun.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M-Pub. And just start with that.
First and foremost, it's been one whole year since Ian has quit his job. So congratulations, Ian. And a few months ago, I quit mine. And as you can imagine, a lot of people around us are picking it up that Ian and I have been able to maintain the lifestyle that we've had with now both of us not working. And why is that?
Because we have the best money ever invented.
Yeah. And then comes the questions. Well, I don't understand. You say you're not supposed to spend your Bitcoin. It's a savings account. So how do you live off of it? And where do you even spend Bitcoin? Do people even accept Bitcoin? All of these questions around, well, like, how do you actually live off slash enjoy, let's say, the benefits of Bitcoin? These are great questions. And I would say the way that Ian and I are doing things are the way that we're deciding to do things. And so everyone has free will. You're in charge of deciding how Bitcoin fits into your life. But we would like to answer some of those questions that we often get to hopefully help you, the listener, figure out how Bitcoin might fit into your life. So yes, Bitcoin is savings. The idea is that you always have more Bitcoin today than you had yesterday. So like first, we can talk about the spending strategy or the buying strategy, buying strategy and then the spending strategy. So Ian, lay out the buying strategy for Bitcoin. Like, usually this is what happens. We're making the pitch to Bitcoin to someone and then they're like, okay, well, what if I want to buy a whole Bitcoin? How do I do that? That's usually the first question. So take it away, babe.
I mean, the easiest way is for me to just sell it to you.
Yeah, that's right? What Ian always says.
or not even sell it to you. Like, the easiest way is for me to do it for you, yeah. Right? Because I'm already set up to do it. So I have all the systems. I have all the accounts at all the places. And it's not a big deal for if you give me the money for me to do it for you. But the more important part about, like, how do you buy a whole Bitcoin is that if I'm talking to you about Bitcoin and you don't understand it, you probably shouldn't buy a whole Bitcoin, right? For two reasons. Number one, you shouldn't put at the moment $100,000 into something that you don't understand. Like, that's just good financial advice. But also, like, part of buying Bitcoin is understanding and reinforcing the idea that you're, again, having more Bitcoin tomorrow than you did today. Well, if you buy all your Bitcoin today and then you never acquire any more, what have you really done, right? Like, you haven't actually gotten on the path of saving. You just gotten on the path of, I want to own a thing. And now I own the thing, and I could say I own the thing and just go on with my life and do everything else that I was already doing that was basically not so much financially irresponsible, but probably not the best decisions to be making.
Yeah, now that you have this new set of information, there's this new invention, you should be migrating over to this new money rather than just buying some and getting on with your day.
Yeah, and the example I'll give is one of my dad's friends. So back when we were first getting into this, I think before the podcast even started, one of my dad's friends wanted to know about Bitcoin. I talked to him for a little bit, and I was like walking him through how to like DCA and stuff like that.
DCA means?
Dollar cost average. It just means buying the same amount of Bitcoin on some regularly scheduled timeline. And so I was trying to convince him, like, oh, you could put like, you know, a little bit a day or a little bit a week or a month or whatever. Okay, let's talk again later. And like the next time I talked to him, he was like, oh, I put like $20,000 in. And I was like, oh, okay, well then you won't be DCA. Like, you won't be doing that. And I'm 90% certain he has not gotten any more since that day. Has he done okay with that? Sure. Does he understand what Bitcoin is because he kept following it and he kept buying it and he kept paying attention to what's going on? I highly doubt it.
Right. And knowing the math around Bitcoin, knowing what's happening with the other assets, at least in the stock market, Bitcoin is the best performing asset. And so if you were DCAing or if you were paying closer attention to Bitcoin, you were using it more as a savings, you would have been able to make the decision to be putting more into Bitcoin the past 5 years. And you would probably financially be happier with your portfolios than possibly you are today. Most people that hold any stock today are not very happy.
Sure. That's for a lot of reasons that we won't get into on this podcast. But to the point about like, how do you buy, I don't think you should like splash, you know, $100,000 on Bitcoin if you don't understand what it is. I'll stand by that. Even if that might be the right decision, right? I just don't think you should do that because what is more important is to, and we tried getting this going on the podcast. It didn't really work, but you know, you need to train your brain to like think in Bitcoin terms. And so going back to the opening of the show where I said, like, we know how much Bitcoin there is. And that's a very powerful thing. Every 10 minutes, the whole network sums up all the Bitcoin in existence and tells everybody, like, this is the denominator. And with that denominator, you know a couple of things. Number one, you can take the amount of Bitcoin you have and divide it by that denominator. And that's your total percentage that you own of all the Bitcoin in the world. Now, there's some math that says you got to wait a couple years to understand your full percentage, but fundamentally, you know your percentage of the Bitcoin network every 10 minutes. But the second thing that does is it lets you actually calculate your entire lifestyle in Bitcoin terms. And this was the thing that, because we were doing the podcast, I started doing. And so we talk about the price of, you know, acres on Bitcoin Island, right? Well, seeing that number week to week and seeing it go down from when we started, this was like,
was it 4,000?
It was like 5 or 6,000 sats for a dollar.
Yeah.
And now we're at 970. Mm-hmm. you don't need any other economic data. I don't need any spreadsheet or chart or talking head on MSNBC. You just need to see that number going down over the past couple of years to tell your brain it takes more and more dollars to get the same amount of Bitcoin. And that alone should tell you that there's something wrong with your dollars. You may not want to admit it, right?
Yeah.
But there are currencies on the planet right now where it takes millions and some of them billions of their units to acquire one Bitcoin. If Bitcoin was at $1 billion today, people would be having a lot of questions. Well, there's people in the world where it's a billion of their units to acquire a Bitcoin.
Well, okay, Ian, now that you've possibly convinced me to maybe buy some Bitcoin, I don't understand. How do I then get to spend it? Or like, do I just keep it forever? How do I then enjoy it?
Well, I mean, enjoyment is all relative, right? Like you might enjoy the price of Bitcoin going up and you being able to afford something that you couldn't afford. Other people might just enjoy not having to worry about money and know that like, well, I live such a simple lifestyle that I fundamentally never have to work for someone else ever again, right?
But what does that mean? I fundamentally don't have to work with someone. Like I still have to take my Bitcoin out to then spend it on my housing and my food and all of those things.
So, I mean, again, this is where I think people are literally trying to convince themselves to not do it because they're grasping at things that unless you give them the answer that they want to hear, they're going to be like, well, I don't know about this thing if I can't do it the way that I want to do it. For example, where do I spend it? Well, like I just said a second ago, I bought honey with Bitcoin. I didn't go to Whole Foods and buy honey with Bitcoin, right? But there's a guy that sells honey for Bitcoin. So I can give him Bitcoin. He can give me honey. Now I got a honey guy. There's a guy that sells soap, homemade soap, beef tallow, I can give him Bitcoin. He gives me soap. Now I got a soap guy. I'm working on our farmers. So I have I got a beef guy, right? Like, you can find people that will trade goods and services with you for Bitcoin, number one. But that takes work. People are used to going to a big store that has everything they want. They throw it all in a cart and then they push it through the checkout line and they give them, you know, they tap a credit card and walk out the door. Mm-hmm. You can't do that with Bitcoin. I don't know what to tell you. Like, there might be some places, but it ain't the places that you shop probably.
Well, I think this is where you tie it back to this is an invention. It's a new invention. And every year, more and more people are accepting Bitcoin. And if you become a Bitcoiner and you possibly run a business or services or any, or you're a consumer, you can accept Bitcoin or you can ask, hey, do you take Bitcoin? And this is what people have been doing now for over a decade. And more people are accepting Bitcoin as payment. And it's 100% legal to accept Bitcoin as payment in United States as a business, in other countries as a business, in most places, I think. I don't want to make broad sweeping statements, but there are there's a map. It's called BCTC map that can show you if anywhere around you takes Bitcoin or if there's a Bitcoin ATM, which you should not use. Though they have very high fees. But you are getting in on something still relatively early. It's progressed enough that, yeah, you could go online and find someone to buy honey with, right? You could go and possibly find local people that accept Bitcoin, but it's bigger than you know. And like, funny story, we're not going to Dubai, but I thought we were. And I was doing some research. And of course, as you know, our money is in Bitcoin. And so I suddenly thought, hey, could I find like a travel agency that takes Bitcoin? And there are many travel agencies in Dubai that take Bitcoin. So maybe not in America. I hadn't even checked in America, but I think we could have paid for our trip in Bitcoin and had a travel agency book everything for us. And so there are ways that Bitcoiners are catered to around the world because Bitcoiners at this point have money to spend. And so this is just, you know, the first half of 2025. Who knows where the world will be in a few years? And if you have Bitcoin and you've waited and the value of it goes up, you probably have a lot more purchasing power in the future to spend on things that you regularly do. It's coming, but you have to appreciate and understand that you're early on something. And yeah, so you can't go into all of the places and websites that you currently go to and just like hit the Bitcoin button instead of the Visa. But it's coming. And I think the more that you live it, the more that you understand it and ask to pay in Bitcoin everywhere you go, the faster we'll get there. But it's inevitable because this is better money.
Yeah. So when you get into Bitcoin and, you know, you know, we've been in it for a couple of years now, so you see the number going up and you see like zeros getting tacked on, right? That's like a good feeling, right? But if you're not in Bitcoin, you can think of it as zeros getting removed from your wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So billionaires are becoming 100 millionaires. 100 millionaires are becoming 10 millionaires. Millionaires are becoming 100,000. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what's happening. So there's a lot of people that have, let's say, a big number, but not a large number, $1 million in cash in the bank. They sold a business or whatever. They have $1 million. They're like, I got $1 million. I'm good. Even those people know like $1 million is not what it used to be, number one. But now this thing called Bitcoin is going to make your $1 million evaporate if you don't convert some of that $1 million into Bitcoin. Because today your $1 million will get you 10 Bitcoin. In 4 years, 10 years, it might be one Bitcoin.
Here's hoping.
But the point is that just like with the housing example, there are people that are benefiting from the inflation. And then there are people that are like, yo, this inflation is crushing us. And all Bitcoin does is flip the script and say, well, instead of inflation, now there's deflation. So you won't drop your price? Fine. My Bitcoin will eventually turn your house into smaller and smaller percentage of the Bitcoin that I hold. So today, yeah, $1 million house is 10 Bitcoin. I don't have it. Maybe I have one Bitcoin. But as it appreciates, if you don't change the price of the house, your house gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to me. And it's just an economic decision. At what point do I think your house is affordable in Bitcoin terms? If you don't participate in the Bitcoin system, everyone is going to lap you. That it's that simple. And there are people that have drastically changed their life situations because they made that switch. Again, not going to get into all of it, but you can look into some of these, you know, look up, like just Google like Bitcoin family. I forget the guy's name. I think it's Tahiti or whatever, but this guy sold all his stuff. And him and his family of like 3 or 5 daughters and his wife have been like traveling the world for like the past 6, since I've been in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
From what I can tell, they don't work, yeah. Right? And they're always on some island or they're always at some Bitcoin comp. Like they live a lovely life, at least through social media, right?
I think those stories though are kind of hard for people to connect to because if you're living a regular life, 9 to 5, hustle and grind, you own your house, you have 2 cars and you're just trying to get it done. You're trying to live, right? Those people hear those stories and are like, great for them, not for me. Let's explain our situation. Our situation was that Ian and I had 2 well-paying jobs. We did well. We could have lived in the fiat world and we would have always probably been stressed out about like, are we making enough money? Do we have enough saved up for retirement? But like living comfortably. Ian did not like his job. He was miserable. In a almost instant, like I will say, we had talked about it, but it was a very like just do it, pull the plug, quit your job. Ian was able to do that. Our lifestyle continued because our savings, our like actual wealth in our savings was in Bitcoin. So there wasn't this panic of, are we saving enough money? And there was a very safe reserve that we could go into if we needed without penalty, which I think is a very important piece of it because there are a lot of people who have money that they cannot touch. Or if they touch, there is a true penalty. And even if they can afford that penalty, they mentally do not want to touch that money, right? That's a big thing that we just did not have last year as we were able to just figure out what would first and foremost make Ian happy and then work for our family. We came up with a family business. And I think it's so easy to be like, yeah, but you guys had a podcast. You figured it out. Bitcoin and us. No, We took the time to see what would be a business that could work for our family to give us the lifestyle that would help us have the life that we want, raise our child the way we want, all of those things. Fast forward, you know, 10 months, 9 months, I comfortably was able to quit my job without fear, right? Because we had time to come up with hopefully a business plan that'll work. Ian and I are now working on executing that plan. But at the same time, money is not a fear. There is still a way for us to move forward without unknowns around what's going to happen to us financially. And I cannot imagine us having this situation in the security without Bitcoin. Ian and I do not come from wealth. We do not come from wealthy families. We do not have generational wealth. And for us to be able to operate in this way is insane to me. I know of people who have been able to do whatever they want, quit their jobs, not work, take time off, take sabbaticals, test out a new business, this and that, travel as much as they want. I have never been that person. And what we have been able to do in this past year, if you had told me 5 years ago, I would have been like, I would even tell you, like, I don't even want that, because I wouldn't have even thought I could want that. I was allowed to want that. And all of this is only possible with Bitcoin. And it's a very awkward or possibly unfortunate timing to be experiencing this when everyone else is panicking about their future, when everyone else does not know that what they should do, what next move they will make, whether or not they'll lose their jobs. But Bitcoin is right here for them. And it worked for us because we bought it, we held it, we studied it, we lived it. And we decided to move forward with a new set of rules instead of operating in the old ones.
Yeah. I would like to make one small correction to that. You could do this without Bitcoin. People have done this before Bitcoin.
Yeah, I was too scared to.
Whatever. I'm just saying, like, people have done this, what we're describing, what you're describing. They've done that before without Bitcoin. Bitcoin just makes it easier to execute on that idea because, again, it lets you do financial calculation. I'll use the example you gave. Like, you don't have to worry about withdrawing money from your retirement account to pull this off because there are penalties, right? They don't let you touch it. They'll let you borrow your money in your retirement account.
Such a scam.
Or if you want to go like full in and say, screw it, give me all my money. Well, they're going to make you pay a penalty and tax you on it. So sometimes you can take your retirement account out and you might lose 20, 30, 40% of it. Just whack right off the top. Because you're touching money that you shouldn't touch because there were extra rules on it. With Bitcoin, you still pay that penalty. But what Bitcoin does is it lets you recoup that loss. Now, it takes time. Now, depending on when you do that is how long it might take to recoup that. But the math of Bitcoin says you'll recoup that. It'll be okay.
Also, the reality that you're living in is you have no idea if your retirement is even going to be there for you when it's time for you to retire.
I mean, that's a different conversation. But yeah, sure, like, especially in the West, the United States, like, people used to operate on pensions. Pensions don't exist anymore. They're kind of a relic of the past. You can pretty much be assured that, like, I'm sure retirement accounts will exist, but they're going to go the way of pensions because they're all just fundamentally a scam. And it's not saying that people in the business are scammers or anything like that. It's just these products were created in tandem with the government to lock up fiat. So it's not circulating in the economy. It's just circulating in this fictitious place called the market. And as long as it's there, the inflation can happen there, which is why the stock price goes up. In times of stress and crisis where everyone needs their money, they pull it out of the market. And it doesn't matter who you are. You could be a guy with $10,000. You could be a business with $100 million. Everyone's like, no, I need the cash because being in the market, I can't spend it in the market. With Bitcoin, your money is not in the market. Like, there may be a ticker and it may appear, as far as Google is concerned, that there's a market that your money is in called Bitcoin, but that is not the case. It is if you put it certain places, but the way that most Bitcoiners hold their money, it's the equivalent of having gold bars in a safe in your house. Mm-hmm. Like you can hold it in that way. And when you hold it that way, then, I mean, the biggest thing that I think we in the West have not experienced in a while, and I think we're about to experience it probably in the next 4 to 8 years, is when your money is in a bank or any of these instruments, the financial markets in general, it fundamentally does not belong to you. And if something goes wrong, they turn off the lights. You can't touch it until they turn the lights back on and they tell you what they've done with your money. We've seen this in places that we kind of laugh about, like Greece and Lebanon, right? And like the banks just closing up and no one can get their money and people going in robbing the banks for their money. But those problems exist everywhere that fiat is.
It happened at Silicon Valley Bank.
It happened. It did happen
yeah,
here.
Yeah, it happened here already. We just saw the government somehow come in and fix it. And yeah, but no one is immune. This can happen to anyone. This will be happening a lot more, I believe, in America, because the government is very openly going after targeted groups of people. And they're going to go after businesses to criminalize, like possibly protecting those groups of people. So it's all coming. And I think if you didn't until now, today is the day that you just buy a little Bitcoin, $5. Just give it a go.
Yeah, I think that point is a little lost. So you're saying like, oh, just get started, buy a little bit. Whether it's a little bit or a lot, the fundamental question is like, well, how do I do that? I think it's actually harder to buy a little bit than it is to buy a lot, right? Like if you're buying a lot, you know, a Bitcoiner will facilitate it, mm-hmm. right? If you're buying like $5, it's kind of like, I mean, I got to set you up with Lightning to sell you $5 mm-hmm. worth of Bitcoin. That's a different conversation.
Right. But for somebody listening to our podcast, they don't have possibly a Bitcoiner that is going to go hold their hand through it. It has to be like the mass adoption strategy that's happening through apps like River or Strike for someone to be able to go in and figure it out for themselves. I do not think most people are going to have a Bitcoiner holding their hand through any of this.
Well, I mean, the joke is always like, go ask a teenager, right? Like if you don't understand some new technology, go ask the kids. They tend to understand. And so it's not that they don't have one. It's that they haven't asked for one. I'm sure like your cousin, like everyone in the family could ask and he would respond, right? They are around, but if you don't ask, if you're not curious, if you're not asking for help to do this thing, you don't know who already knows. So while it is possible they don't have a Bitcoiner holding their hand at the moment, I'm sure they are one degree of separation from at least one.
I mean, I hope so. But if you're not, you should take the time, 5 minutes of your life, ask an AI agent to walk you through it. But I urge people to explore this as a way to help their mental health. Because if you're sitting here doom scrolling all day, hearing about how bad the economy is getting, freaking out, complaining about egg prices, do something about it. You're smart. You're capable. You can figure out what Bitcoin is. You can understand what's broken about the money. And you can set yourself up for a new path towards new solutions instead of just wanting to complain about the state of the world. Or just wanting to get scared about your money situation. Like, take control of your life. Grow up. Be an adult. Download an app. Sign up and buy some Bitcoin. You can do it. I believe in you.
You sound like me in season one of this podcast.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M-Pub. And just start with that.
It's time for Satoshi for your thoughts, Ian. You ready?
Always.
So in your, I don't know, 5 years of orange pilling people, what is the one thing you wish you could say to people that are, you know, being Bitcoin haters in those conversations that you would never say to their face?
I mean, I'll keep it family friendly, I suppose. No, so when I was growing up, you know, like high school, just out of high school, first moved to DC, I used to have this saying that was, and I still say it, more in a joking manner, but eventually my dad is always right. And that was one of the things that like I started saying as a joke, but then as I got older, it just became reality to where like things that my dad had said to me like 10, 15 years prior just started like unfolding in front of me. And I was like, man, my dad said this was going to happen. As friendly as I can say that to them, it's like, eventually I'll be right. And when you realize that I was right, you'll have lost all the time that you could have benefited from just listening to what I was saying instead of trying to point out why I was wrong. I don't have a particular timeline. I can't tell people exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, but I can point to things that are happening in the world and say, what do you think that's going to do? You know? And when people are arguing or being skeptics, they have the least amount of information. And I'm like, I'm sorry, have you been following this topic for the last 7 years? I'm sorry, how many books have you read, let alone on Bitcoin in the last 7 years? Because I've read a lot of freaking books, not just about Bitcoin, right? I've accepted that my education about money was very bad, and I thought I understood money. Perhaps your understanding of money is very bad also, and you're just not willing to accept that. And the longer you're not willing to accept the fact that all of our understanding of money was broken because none of us have lived in a world with this thing called Bitcoin, it's like people who lived in the world before electricity. It's like, oh, we can't run the factories at night. There's no sunlight. Yeah, but we have light bulbs. No, nobody's light bulbs, man. Like, we need
that's a fad. Electricity is a fad.
We could burn the factory down. It's like, well, then that's a thing we want to protect against, but assuming we can solve that problem of not burning the factory down, do you see how these light bulbs could probably benefit us, right? I think that, like, the thing that people, that I've observed in a lot of people is, especially the more skeptical they are, they tend to be moderately successful people, moderately to highly educated people, and people who have fundamentally benefited from the broken system, whether they want to admit it or not.
You know, my favorite thing, and I think we can close on this. I love when I've had a conversation with someone, or Ian and I have been talking to someone about Bitcoin, and I see that they're kind of getting it. Like, their defenses are down, their shoulders have kind of dropped. And I say, I know this is a lot to take in, but there's a saying, you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve. And their faces drop. Every time their face drops. And I go, so if you decide today is the day that you want to really get into it, that today's price is the price that you'll get. But I'm sure someone told you about Bitcoin years ago and you didn't pay attention to it then. You didn't deserve it then. Maybe you deserve it today. So
yeah,
do you deserve Bitcoin at the price today, or do you deserve Bitcoin at the price 5 years from now, 10 years from now? That's up to you.
Yeah, it's all up to you, man.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M pub. And just start with that.